I'm here with Dave Kingswood today. Dave, everybody seems to know you. You're a figure that everywhere in the church, and I know that you're married to Carlin, you've got two children. Your early life, I believe that you used to live or grew up in southwest London, is that right? And perhaps you can explain a bit about your early life over that side of the country.
Yeah, so I grew up in a place called North Cheam. For those who've got a very good memory, you might remember that Tony Hancock used to live in East Cheam. And it was only funny to people in Cheam because they were the only people who actually knew there was no East Cheam. And so that's why it was a funny joke. But you can see his picture in the local Wetherspoons there. So yeah, I lived there until I was 20 years old. I became a Christian when I was 15. I was brought up in a church, but my mum and dad took me along every week and I wasn't buying any of it.
Because I take you as a bit of a rebel, actually. But you're probably not. You're the nicest guy ever.
Bless you. I think I was very cheeky with God, certainly for the first part of my life. Yeah, when I was 15, I remember I was at a weekend in London with a whole load of other people with my youth group. Yeah, I remember this guy talking. I still can't remember what he was talking about, actually, other than the fact that he must have been talking about Jesus, because he encouraged everyone to pray at the end of this sermon that he did. I can't even remember what he was asking us to pray, but all I said to God was, if you're real, you're going to have to show me, because I wasn't buying it, you see. Anyway, clear as day, I felt God say to me, you're my son and I love you. And I was like, whoa. And I opened my eyes because I thought someone had actually spoken something out over me. And I realized something else was really going on. That was the first time I kind of became a believer I kind of encountered Jesus in that way. And that has kind of come out through the rest of my life. But I had all my education in and around there. I went to college in Epsom, just up the road where the race course is. And when I was 20, I decided to start looking to move out. I had already had some friends that I would go and see in the West Country, and I thought, I don't know, maybe I could head down here and make a new life for myself.
What sort of years was that?
So I moved in 1996, so you can work out my age now, because I was 20 when I moved.
You're young at heart, you look young. You moved yourself, you weren't married obviously then.
No, I wasn't. I put everything in the back of, I used to have a Rover Metro, for those who can remember those little cars, and I packed everything that I owned in the back of my Metro. I put the seats down, put everything in the back, hugged my mum and dad goodbye. I'd been offered a job at a local software company in Bath, which kind of followed on very nicely from what I was doing at college. And I remember going for an interview on a Friday afternoon, and they said, can you start on Monday? And I said, I don't even know where I am. I've only just found this place on a map. And the guy laughed and said, okay, Dave, take a month, you know, sort yourself out, find somewhere to live, all that kind of stuff. The boss, or the lady who was going to be my boss at the time, who just interviewed me, said, hey, look, I know this family who are looking for a lodger. Do you want me to have a word with them? Because they're really nice. They go to my local church. She knew I was a Christian because she was too. We've been chatting about it a little bit. She said, yeah, I know this family. Do you want to kind of get together? I said, that'd be great. And within a week or two, I had sat down with this family called the Skinners, who are still very, very good friends of ours. They were looking for a lodger. They had a bedroom. And so I took it and I moved in the following, I think it was a couple of weeks later. And in that couple of weeks, they'd said to me, oh, just to let you know, we're going on holiday for 3 weeks, Dave, as soon as you move in. So I moved in, I had lunch with them, and then they left me with their 6-bedroom house and a cat looking at me saying, who are you? And that was it, and that was kind of my start, yeah.
Great, you landed yourself a job, you had somewhere to live straight away, you moved to one of the nicest parts of the country, away from some of the pollution in London, and I've got a feeling you had done several jobs. I'm not sure how long you lasted there at the software house. Well, how did their career develop from there on?
I was in software till about 2005, I think it was. So, yeah, about 8 or 9 years. And while I was doing that, in the background, I was doing a lot of volunteering, particularly in youth and children's work in the church. And so I was doing stuff on Sundays. I was going out to kids' clubs in the evening or young people's clubs. I was also out doing street evangelism. Welton used to have a converted library bus thing, and we used to drive that down. And every time it turned over, I was absolutely amazed. It was a complete jalopy of a thing. But we used to go down and hang out with kids on the streets. And I just had this real heart that was growing towards children and young people. The company that I was with moved from this lovely place called Limpley Stoke, which was in Bath. That was a big jump, actually, from London. The very first day I started in this company, I saw a kingfisher fly past outside my window because I used to look over the River Avon. I felt like I was a long way from home. But they then moved to central Bristol, so it was becoming a bit trickier to get in for, but also this growing heart there. So I was already thinking about, okay, God, what's next? Like, where is this life of mine headed? As I was starting to think about it, I'd been working on a project with Rolls-Royce, with the Rolls-Royce and Vickers, that was the kind of defence arm of the Rolls-Royce group. And I worked on this thing for a year, and then the entire project got mothballed. And I thought, is this what my life's about? Is this where I'm headed? Am I going to just be writing software and then it all goes out the window? The guy opposite me, who we got along fine, he said, Dave, what are you worried about? You got paid anyway. And it was in that moment I thought, that's not enough. That's not enough. I need to have something that's got real meaning and longevity, and it needs to be somehow about the kingdom of God. Now, as all of that was happening and kind of cooking away inside my brain, my church was starting to put adverts out and feelers to get a youth worker, a youth and children's worker. So I thought, I'll just put in a CV for that, even though none of my CV looked particularly good because I had this entire career and another thing. Long story short, I got that job. It took a bit of figuring out because, as you can imagine, a part-time children's and youth worker post didn't pay as much as a software company would pay for someone who'd been doing it for 9 years. But God was good, and my father-in-law was also looking for someone to help with his business. And so between the church and working with my father-in-law, I was able to make it work fiscally. And so I took the jump.
God dear, what a busy life you led then and still do. But how did you manage to meet your lovely wife?
Yeah, so Carly and I met in the late 90s. Actually, it was at Welton. It was at church. And when I first met her, I was actually with somebody else, and so was she. And, you know, we just hung out as friends. And then whatever happened, you know, because your kids, those other relationships kind of broke up. And, yeah, we started hanging out a little bit more. And then after a while, we realised we were quite keen on one another. We married in 2001.
Dave, now married, no doubt kids on the way, and kids sort of bring their own issues, lots of headaches and financial stuff. How did you cope with all the early life there?
Well, when we first started out, Carly and I, we were both in full-time jobs. She actually was the youngest social worker in the country. She qualified, I think, when she was just past her 21st birthday or late in her 20th. And so we kind of went for it, actually, in early life, and we kind of squirreled some money away and paid some money off the mortgage and things like that. In 2006, our son came. And so, you know, we'd been married for a little while, and we waited for a little while. And also, actually, Noah took a little while to come as well, which can be other people's stories as well. Yeah, he came along in 2006, which was just wonderful. Then Hope came in 2008.
Right. It's nice to have interests of something completely different. What sort of interests have you got then, Dave?
Yeah, well, that's even changed over the years a little bit. I think I would have many of the standard ones that other people would have. So I love movies, I love reading. I particularly got into audiobooks over the last couple of years as well. Really love good food. Like, that's way up my list. If I can spend my money on things, it generally is me nipping off to a restaurant someplace. Mercifully, my wife also feels the same way. So we don't have to argue about where we spend our money because we like to do that kind of thing. Also, it's quite geeky, but I do have a metal detector and I go out. And it's partly because it's actually kind of a lovely, gentle way to exercise. You can just walk around, you can have your own thoughts and prayer life with all of that. But there's also something in there, and it particularly speaks to the way I'm wired, that idea of kind of looking for treasure in the most ordinary places. You know, I read story after story in the newspapers as well of people who have found the most incredible things in the nation. So I always hold out hope, but at the moment I've basically become a glorified rubbish collector.
No, I'm sure it's not rubbish. Possibly if you were still living near London, you'd be one of these mud larkers that would walk up the Thames. You must get really excited though when you find something. It doesn't have to be a value, but you find something really unique.
Yeah, you do. A friend of mine has got some fields. He's got a local farm and he owns a couple of fields, and came across something really simple one day. I was actually with my son and a friend of his. My detector went off and we dug down, and I realized quite quickly what we found was pretty big. And so that's exciting, but also can fill you with fear because you kind of think, oh no, have I found a bomb or something like that? Wondering that you're going to be kind of blowing everyone up. But actually, on this particular one occasion, it was a piece from an old plough. And that field is no longer ploughed anymore, but it was this lovely kind of image of history of the fact that at some point this field had had another life and had brought food and, you know, other things to the community. And there was this little chunk of history that was just sat in the ground.
Yeah, it's interesting you say about thinking, oh, it might be a bomb. Do you have on your mobile number the bomb disposal people, just in case? I wonder, perhaps not. But that excitement and that painting a picture when you discover something, does that inspire you to speak about the Christian gospel?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, treasure a particularly biblical treasure, is something that really lights me up. I've got this terrier-like element of my personality where if I will read a verse in the Bible and it doesn't quite make sense, where other people might skirt over it, I'll be ferocious with it and I'll get all my books out and I'll try and work out what the context of that verse is, what the people were dealing with at the time, what God was trying to say through it, all those kind of things. Because for me, again, in those ordinary places, you have these wonderful bits of treasure. And so I love opening up scripture and particularly helping other people understand it as well. And so, yeah, there's certainly a lovely allegorical element of what I do in the field as to what I do on a Sunday morning.
Would this metal detecting hobby, could that move into an area like gold prospector? I think discovering gold is a bit like discovering someone's lost soul. I've seen some of these programs on TV out in Australia where they're mining for gold, and they get so excited, when quite rightly too, when they discover a nugget of gold. And I sometimes think that's a bit like saving a soul.
This idea of treasure, I think, is fundamentally inbuilt in us. And I think when we're Christians and we understand that the intrinsic value of people, like what I call the diamond inside of people, is all there. It's ready to be found. And when I look at people, I can see that diamond, sometimes even if they can't see it themselves. And so, yeah, when you're out with your detector, your deepest heart is to find the gold. You know, you want to find it. You know, it might be really tricky, but you know, people find stuff all the time. But I do think when we kind of take that image into the way church works, into the people that we see in day-to-day life, the people that we interact with at work, that question of God, what do you see when you see this person? Invariably, God will show you the gold inside that person. And I think it's important that we kind of have a laser focus in on that and talk about people and explore people with that in mind.
This sounds a fascinating hobby. In fact, you've almost hooked me into wanting to do metal detecting. But is it something that you do solitary, or perhaps go out with one other person, or even a group? And is it very competitive?
So I do it in a solitary way, because like I said, I use it for that time just to spend with God, to slow down. I run hot most of my life. Hopefully you know what I mean by that. I kind of live life at 1,000 miles an hour. I'm not sure if that's good or bad, but I just do. And so it's a chance for me to slow down and kind of reconnect and feel connected to the earth again as well. So I don't do it with other people, but other people do. They go out in, you know, in twos and threes. I think it can get competitive amongst friends, but it's always friendly, you know, it's like that. And then there are clubs that you can join where they will get permissions that go over a weekend or something like that, maybe on land that's never been detected before. So hopefully you've got more chance of finding something as well. I've never personally gone down that road. There's a lot of time yet, so maybe.
Yeah, I understand that. It fits your thinking. You use it to see God in everything, in a way.
Yeah, it's those really simple images of reconnection, about going back to the earth, but realizing in a very common field, there can be treasure. And I think when I read the scriptures, when I see the way that Jesus dealt with people, he would always, in the very common things, even in some of the miracles that he did, spitting in the ground and taking mud and putting it on people's faces, and water and wine, you know, these are everyday things. Jesus would kind of say, wait, they're not ordinary if God's involved with it. We can just look at it as mud and wine and water and spit and sweat and whatever. But actually, when God's involved in those things, extraordinary things can come about.
You mentioned earlier that you're involved in a restaurant, and I think it sounds like a very posh restaurant as well, by all accounts. But perhaps you can give us an insight to what you do there.
Yeah, so this is a very funny story. Like I said earlier on, one of my passions is food. My brother-in-law, last summer, he said to me, Dave, I found this really cool place just outside of Bristol, Bristol Airport. I think we should go and have a look. And I said, okay, set it up. I'll go with you. Love it. We went there. And I have to say, it was some of the most extraordinary food that I've ever eaten. It was incredible. This restaurant, very small restaurant, only about kind of 20 covers or so, was built around a big walled Victorian garden. And the majority of what was on the plate had come directly from the garden. So you could see the food growing outside the window. But these guys had just done the most phenomenal work with it all. Some of the most inventive food that I've ever had. I went away from that thinking, well, that was great. And then without me knowing it, my brother-in-law had a few adult beverages one evening, and he booked the place again, but not checked in with me this time. And he said, "Dave, do you fancy going again?" I said, "Well, we'd spent a lot of money on that last time." And I said, "Well, look, I'll tell you what, why don't we'll go again, but this can be our birthday presents to one another or whatever." So we decided to do that. Now, while we were having lunch this time, because we went for a dinner the previous time, my wife had gone into the loo, and she'd come out and she said, "Dave, they're looking for staff here." Now, I'd already been thinking about doing a bit of additional work in my life, because everything else that I was doing, or I currently am doing, was in the Christian world. And I kind of thought, I'm not out there flexing my evangelistic muscle. I'm not kind of connected to industry like I used to be anymore. And I felt like that was important. But when she said that, I just laughed, because I said, "Look, I've got no experience in hospitality whatsoever, love. I've never pulled a pint of beer. I've never served a plate of food. These are serious people, you know. They're on their way to get a Michelin star." I said, "They're not going to entertain." She said, "I don't know, Dave. I think you should call them up." So I woke up the next day and I wrote what I can at best describe as a 14-year-old's email saying, "I think you're brilliant. I'd love to work here." They said, "Well, okay, come on down, we'll have a chat." So I went down the following week and they asked about my hospitality experience. And I said, "Look, I'll be really honest, I haven't got any." I said, "But hopefully my CV is the fact that I keep coming back, the fact that I love it here." And they said, "Do you know what?" They said, "We can teach you how to do absolutely all this job, but we can't teach you to be passionate about what we're doing." And they said, "Clearly you've got that." And so I said, "Okay, well, what do you want to do then?" And they said, "Well, why don't you come and do a trial shift? We'll see how you get on." Long story short, I've been working there since March, and I do 3 shifts a week, and I get to serve the most incredible food to people. I get to talk to people about food and wine. I get to work with these alongside, but not cook, with these incredible chefs. And I just find it to be an absolutely magical place. It's wonderful.
This is something you're obviously very passionate about, the food element. Do your colleagues get to see your Christian values and your faith in action?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm working with people who, they're bright. They're not, these are people who are really progressing in their careers, and they're often in their 20s, and they're asking the big questions of life. They're asking what they think family will look like for them, what spirituality looks like, this, that, and the other. And so when I get into this stuff with people, they've naturally got questions. They're not scared to talk about spirituality or about Jesus. But I've noticed with a lot of people in that age group, they're not so prejudiced maybe as maybe some older generations are. When I speak to some of my colleagues, you know, some of them have grown up in quite orthodox environments and have felt a lot of shame and guilt as they've kind of gone through. And so they've been turned off to ideas of faith. So it's been very nice to kind of reframe some of those things and kind of say, "Look, there's another way of looking at it. Have you ever read this story? What do you think Jesus meant by that?" Jesus would often ask questions, say, what do you think this means?" And so I like the way that Jesus used to do things. You almost reach your own conclusions and he would steer you in it. And I try and do a bit of that with my friends and colleagues as well. Another guy, he's had a really poor experience where he's been told he's going to hell unless he does particular things like that. And so to walk alongside him and say, "Actually, God is for you and he loves you, and primarily his interest is to have a relationship with you." And these are not 1-minute conversations. These are potentially months, maybe years of talking and sharing and me trying to, yeah, walk with people on this stuff.
It's very uplifting for those around you. Do you think it's changed the atmosphere of the place, that you being there?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, you probably have to ask someone else, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would.
But I don't know. I think I'm very, very grateful that I've become a key member of that team. So that for me feels like it's the right place to be. I am passionate about the work and the people that are there and about what they're trying to achieve. So I think the fact that I'm part of that team and everyone's pleased to see me when I turn up, so hopefully I'm not putting too many feet out of place or noses at a joint, whatever you want to call it. So yeah, I think for me it's kind of really hit those key elements of what I wanted to do. But also I think God has this wonderful sense of humour and generosity by the fact that he has given me a place like this to do it in, rather than, I don't know, in some shop somewhere, whatever.
So I take it that you still go there as a customer to eat, and perhaps when you can't afford the bill, you go and say, "Well, I'll do the washing up."
Yeah, I did. There was a joke actually that they used to have about me in there, that I would spend all of my earnings just by coming back and doing it. And they said for them that was just the perfect business model, because they got all their salary back. Anyway, I think I've managed to hold on to a little bit more of my money now. But yeah, I have eaten there a few times, and in fact in a week or so my wife and a few friends are coming as well, and I'll be serving them.
Oh, that's good. Well, I think Hazel and I, we need to visit that place one day. possibly when you're there as a waiter. Is a waiter, isn't it?
I'm behind the bar. I'll come out and see you in the garden and chat to you about the food. And yes, I do quite a few different bits.
Dave, wow. You are a character. You've got so many, not irons in the fire, but you do, as you say, run hot, as the word I think you mentioned. Now, I understand that you're involved heavily with fostering, what's associated around it, all the administration, all sorts of complicated things that people perhaps wouldn't appreciate. Perhaps give us, the listeners, a flavour for the work that you do in this area.
Yeah, so for some of my week, alongside the restaurant and a couple of other bits and pieces, I work for a charity called Home for Good. And Home for Good have a very simple heart, and that is that we find a loving home for every child that needs one in the UK, either through supported lodgings or through fostering or through adoption. It particularly fits well with me. And myself and my family were foster carers for 10 years. I've always had that thing of looking at anyone, like I said, where I'm like, where's the diamond inside that person? And so many children who come through the care system really believe that they're not worth loving, or they don't believe that they've got an identity in family or a connection inside a family that loves them. So I love the idea of kind of coming around kids and helping them navigate that stuff and telling them that they are worth loving, and hopefully they'll develop a relationship and grow that.
Hopefully you're rewarded by some success stories and you can see the fruit of that work.
Absolutely. I mean, that was the case in our own family as well. We had a young lady live with us for 3.5 years. She was the most rewarding and challenging relationship I've ever had in my life. And we journeyed with her as a family. Unfortunately, after 3.5 years, she had to leave us because some of her behaviour was getting too tricky. And so we were really struggling with that. You know, where is God in that? Like, I thought we were doing a good thing. You know, we were focusing in on a kid that really needed it. And, you know, it was so hard, but we knew that she'd been through so many early traumatic experiences. So often these things just come to the surface. You know, adults can't be trusted. So she kind of chosen against us. Anyway, a year later, I was stood in church and I felt these two little arms come around me, and there she was. And she'd bounced around a whole bunch of different foster homes and eventually actually landed with a vicar and his wife not far from here. I think God had it in for her from the beginning, really. And a few months after that, we had the privilege of seeing her baptized. She essentially connected with all these people that had invested in her life, you know, friends in church, us as a family, her youth workers, things like that. And she was like, it's because you didn't judge me, it's because you looked out for me, it's because you took me in, it's because you had me for those overnights, you had me for the afternoon for tea when we couldn't get on at home and things like that. And now I hear from her most days. She's in her 20s now, and she sends me a text and she says, hey dad, how you doing? And she calls Carly and I mum and dad. Very special. And actually recently, I think about 18 months ago, she sent me this grainy picture on her phone and she said, I've changed my name to Kingswood. She changed her surname to that. And you know, this was a kid who came from the worst early experiences, and I just think it's a wonderful image as well of where we've been adopted into God's family. For me, this feels like a very real social justice issue that the church can get involved with.
That's so encouraging to hear. You mentioned the word invest earlier on just then. We hear the word investment in the secular world, that it's better to invest money into something that's going to grow and work rather than just throw money at something or throw time at something. And I've heard the old story about it's better to teach someone to fish rather than give them a fish. So investment. Now, there's something going on at Welton Baptist about invest.
Yeah, so I help head up a program called Invest, which actually I run right across what we call the WebNet region. So it's kind of a good chunk of the Southwest. And the Baptist churches inside it are all offered this program. And what essentially it is, trying to encourage leaders to look at their church and say, okay, there's a bunch of people here who are leaders. How do I invest in them when they're not going to pack in their lives and go to Bible college? Because that's often the way. Either you don't get, either you're not developed very much, or you have to pack in your entire life and go to Bible college. What does a middle ground look like? And that's where this idea came about. So people give the equivalent of a day a week, and we do an individual pathway plan for them. And I get this wonderful moment, as I mentioned earlier on, I'm part of the tech world, but actually I get this wonderful moment where I sit down with a blank sheet of paper and a pen, and I hear what lights people up, and I talk around where people think they might be headed and what God wants to develop, and I get to write out a pathway plan for them for what a year would look like. And I've just seen the most extraordinary things happen to people. You know, people who have had no confidence and they've grown and are now running churches or are elders or running ministries or developing ministries. And that thing of being seen, that thing of someone saying, I see treasure in you, again, it fits with so much of the rest of my life. That really lights me up, and seeing people thrive and grow in whatever God wants to do with them.
You're an amazing guy and an inspiration and encouragement to others. I'd just really like to thank you so much for your time and this interview today. So thanks, Dave.
Oh, bless you. It's been a lot of fun. Yeah, if any of this prompts anyone to think about anything, I'd love to hear from you.
Great, yes. And remember that. Dave's always available, I'm sure. You'll see him around on Sunday, most Sundays, when he's not at the restaurant.